Hello, everyone. Thank you for watching this evening, wherever you are, whoever you might be. It's always such a treat to be able to come in front of the camera and communicate with you and have you as part of our exclusive community here on Patreon. Tonight, I'm going to be going into, UFOs, alien visitors, abductions, that sort of thing. There's going to be a bit of information you've never heard before. I think the only time that I ever released this information might have been in Norway a few years ago when I was there with Kathy. And at that time, I was only supposed to be a speaker once for 90 minutes. As it turns out, I ended up being a speaker there for, about 3 hours the first night. And I would say probably the next three nights afterwards. They always put me on the last person, the last speaker, and I just went and went and went and asked questions, or they asked questions, I answered them. And because I was asked to do this, I had to really think about what would I talk about if I was going to do three more lectures, and knowing full well that these lectures would go anywhere from 2 to 4 hours in length. Of course, I had a wealth of information to talk about, so it really wasn't a huge, huge issue for me. But some of the things I was going to talk about, I'd never really discussed before in a lecture. And tonight, since that time, I've not talked about this, I don't think, and tonight I'm going to be telling you some things that I know that I think that you'll find very interesting. The subject, as I said, is UFOs, aliens, ETs, abductions, contact, sightings, the whole bit, and the focus of what I'm going to be talking about really centers around myself. Not so much on other people's experiences, because actually, there's a lot of people out there talking about their experiences, but the ones that I know the best that I can talk about are my own. So I hope you enjoy the show this evening. I want you to also know that right below, and I don't have that panel pulled up, I suppose I should, and if you'll give me just a couple seconds, I'm going to open up another browser window so that I can do that. There is, right beneath where you are watching this, we have a new feature. It's called Discuss. Some of you call it Discus. It's D-I-S-C-U-S. Now, this is as close to Facebook and Facebook Live as it gets. You put your comments in there, they're immediately available to everyone. You don't have to reload your browser as you would do if you were on, watching on Vimeo, for example. You have to reload your browser, then you miss part of the show, it has to reload the video and all that. We're done with that. That's no longer part of the plan. Now we have Discuss. They call it Discuss, so I guess I should too. And you can put your questions and comments right in there, and just like on Facebook, I can read those in real time, and when I do, I can answer your questions that way. And for some of you in other countries, that might be, just the thing. But also, as I have put out in the newsletter type thing that I send out to everyone, there's also going to be callers taken later this evening, in about an hour or so. And we have a special link. If you're in another country, outside of US and Canada, you can use that link as your phone. It doesn't cost you anything to call in and talk and ask questions. And I encourage you to do that. It doesn't really cost us anymore. So you might as well take advantage of it if you're outside of the US or Canada. Otherwise, there is a phone line. There are five of them, actually. And I can I'm looking here to see something. It just doesn't make sense to me. There we go. There are five phone lines, and you can call in. The number will be on your screen when that is available. No need to call ahead of time, of course, because you'll just get a message saying that it isn't working right now. I'm running out of chaos. So, let me get this window open so I'm ready to see your comments. And that way... no, that's wrong. Give me just a second, folks. I'm sorry. There's a lot here for me to pay attention to and get ready to do the show. And this is one of those things that... that should do it. There we are. There we go. Let's see here. There we go. Members area. And this should give me... There we go. Paranormal stories. Good. And freeze that video out. I don't need that. And I already see there's someone here. There's Peggy from Oregon. How you doing, Peg? Glad to see you here. So I will be monitoring this as I'm talking. I'll just bring this down and put it right over the top of the radio server, because I'm not going to be dealing with that at all until it's time to close out the show. So as you can see, it's very easy, isn't it, Peg? You can just go there, type in something. Here, I'll show you how it's done. Hi, folks. And it is done. And you get an immediate change on your screen. You can see the message. So we really are happy about this, and it's all because of Matt. Thank you very much, Matt. We have other things that we're working on for this website as well, and some things that will help this show go a little bit more smoothly. It goes more smoothly when I have everything done in advance, and I didn't have that done in advance, obviously. All right, well, let's just jump right into it. So that you know, I want to give you kind of a brief overview, and then I'm going to go into some details. When I was very, very young, and we're talking maybe 5 years old, there were things that happened earlier than that are very, very foggy in my memory, so I'm not going to really go into that. But at about 5 years old, I was riding with my dad in the car in Denver, Colorado. And we were going through town. I was looking out the window in the back seat, and there was a large UFO parked in a parking lot. Well, yeah, I didn't think anything of it. I didn't know any better. And so I told him, stop, look. He stopped and he looked and he said, we really need to leave those guys alone right now. They just must have needed to stop and do some work to fix their engine. I said, well, can't we go help them? He says, no, they've got it. It's all right. No need to bother them. They'll be fine. And then he took off again. That never even seemed strange to me at the time, because I had no idea that there was anything strange to be associated with it. It wouldn't be until I was about 5 years old that I think I had the mumps. And, you know, back then when kids had the mumps, it wasn't considered that big of a deal. You're just not doing too well for a few days, maybe a week, and then afterwards you're fine again and everything was all right. Well, I was sleeping, not in my bed, in where I would normally, in my room, We were in this two-bedroom apartment below a house. The gal's name was Miss Manus, or an elderly lady. Stairs come down, and then you go into the door leading into where we lived. I wasn't in my room. I was in the living room. The sofa made out into a bed. It was one of those sofa beds, which I guess at the time was a pretty big deal. And so that's where I lay, not feeling too well. My favorite thing to listen to was the little record player that I had been given as a gift. And I like to listen to this one particular record. It was Hey Diddle Diddle, the Cat and the Fiddle. I know it sounds goofy, but it was one of those things I really liked. And of course, there were a bunch of others that I liked as well, but that one always got my attention. So here it is, the middle of the night. Everyone's asleep. And I woke up. What I saw were about four or five people that were, you know, as I sit and think about it, they must have been about 4 feet tall, right in that area, 4 or 5 feet tall. I mean, they weren't little bitty people. And they were walking into the living room. So I was just a little startled, as you can imagine. And as I watched, one came off to the right side of the bed, and this is like a maybe a queen size, maybe a king size, I don't remember. There was one on the right side, my right side to the bed, and the other to the left side of the bed. One was at the foot of the bed. There was another standing right there where you'd go off to the left into the kitchen area. And there was another of these people that was just standing there. Now, we had these windows really kind of past the foot of the bed near the wall. We had these windows that were rectangular in shape, you know, like you would have in a basement. It was dark outside, as usual. We were living in Aurora, Colorado, which is a little suburb of Denver. And they came over, and I felt calm about it. I wasn't really upset at all. And they proceeded to have something in their hands, and they were touching it to my chest, my abdomen, to my neck, and both sides. They were both doing this with these wands. And they were just touching. They had a glow to them. They were lit up, but not bright like a flashlight. And I was just like turning my head this way, that way. And the one, and I was going to say something, and the one at the foot of the bed who was watching just put his finger up like this, like, shh. And I smiled because he had a funny look on his face. He really didn't have lips. So, in that instant, the record player started playing this Cat and a Fiddle song. And he looked up, and I looked up, and there, floating in the air, there was the whole story from this record, this song, playing itself out. And so here was, if you know the story, then you know the details. It's Hey Diddle Diddle, the Cat and the Fiddle. So here's a cat playing a fiddle, and there wasn't any sound from the cat. It was just a cat standing there, just looking very pleasant and happy, playing a fiddle. Then there was the cow jumping over the moon. A little dog was laughing, and the dish ran away with the spoon. Well, there was like a little flying saucer taking off, and then this other thing, like a spoon, following right behind it, and they just went out the window. And it was about that time that I just got very sleepy, and I went to sleep. That's all I remember about it. It would be the next day that when I woke up, I didn't have the mumps anymore. I was fine. Now, I don't know how long I had the mumps for. I just remember that I had them. And I've never forgotten that very strange set of circumstances that happened that night. When it went a little bit farther into my life, there were a number of other strange things that occurred. Things that happened with my dad, being taken to a Masonic lodge, being dressed up in a one-piece, now we would call it a Lycra outfit, I called it my spacesuit. And I was to read something, because I was able to read at an early age, and I had no problem speaking to or in front of people. So I was in front of this large group of men at some Masonic lodge. I remember it was a Masonic lodge because of the pins and the emblem on the building and so forth. And I read this thing. They all got up, applauded. They were very excited about it. And then they all filed past me, shook my hand, patted me on the shoulder, complimented my father on what a fine kid I was, I guess. And then when my father died, it was very sudden, very unexpected. It was a heart aneurysm, and he died very quickly. It would be a couple more days until these people that had been showing up regularly, to tell you the truth, they've been showing up all my life, so they weren't really strangers. Some of you are familiar with my trips to Florida. Some of you probably have not heard about it. But these were military types. Maybe I'll go into that in just a moment to fill in that blank. But after my father had passed away, these folks showed up and they challenged my mother for ownership of me. She didn't take it very kindly. And she said that I was her son. She had the papers to prove it. No one could take me from her, and they needed to get out. Well, these guys were dressed up like generals, or I don't know what they were, to tell you the truth. They had all these clusters over their left breast. They had stars on their epaulets, hats. They were Air Force. And then there were these guys there that were just dressed in suits. There's about three of those, two or three guys looking like generals, and then a bunch of soldiers. And she took them on, and she forced them out, and they left. Now, jumping back to what I was talking about, going to Florida, that's another bizarre thing that happened. It was during that time we would go to Florida, and the whole idea was to meet up with my Uncle Sam. Now, I know now that sounds a bit cliche, but this fellow had a very large black Lincoln Continental. We would go down to, it was down in southern Florida. I don't remember the exact place. And we would drive there all the way from Denver, and stay in a nice hotel, nice for the era, right on the beach. And I would get into the car with my dad. We'd go for a ride with my Uncle Sam. We'd take off. We'd go out into the Everglades. We'd get out of the car. We'd walk a ways towards the water. There's a boat sitting there. We'd get in the boat. We're going to go for a boat ride. I thought that was great. Went for a distance into the Everglades, and pretty soon the water just ended at a very large accumulation of vines and brush and trees and whatever. And then this fellow would pop out of the weeds with weeds all over him. He was a soldier. And that was explained to me, don't be afraid, because they're here. They're watching us. So I wasn't afraid. I was fascinated. They would pop up. And on this particular occasion, I'd already done this a few times. The fellow would start pulling on a chain, and that would open up this wall of weeds like it was just, you know, a facade. It just kind of swung up into the air, and we just continued right underneath of it, and water dripping on us. We continued on a little ways farther. We docked the boat just on shore. No fanfare, except there were these buildings off to the left that looked like, they were like canvas tents, square, you know, heavy canvas. They were all kind of a whitish, sandy colored, and there were soldiers there. And I was helped out of the boat. I walked up a ways, and this was the last time I ever went there. There was a soldier who had always given me a stick of Juicy Fruit gum, which I loved. I'd have some gum, and you know, I'd walk with them to a point to where these guys in spacesuits would come, and they'd be happy to see me, rustle the top of my head, pat me on the back. I'd go with them, and then I don't know what happened. Maybe the gum was laced with something to just knock me out. Now, the spacesuits were actually like biohazard suits. That's what they look like now, but at the time, I thought they were spacesuits, because space was a big deal back then. So I would wake up the next day, the next morning. Don't know how I got back there. I was just told, well, you got really tired and fell asleep, so we just brought you back home. I'd go back to the hotel, apparently, where I'd wake up, and I had a nice treat. We'd go out for breakfast and have pancakes, and I'd go get to play in the ocean for a while. And then, within a day or so, we'd go all the way back to Denver. And, of course, that thing went on for a number of years, and I've never been able to really ascertain what the reason for it was or who these people actually were. Just a strange, strange thing that I remember. I'm giving you this backstory because I want you to understand that what happens next has some association with the backstory I've just given you. After my father died, we eventually made our way back to Kentucky within a few weeks, actually. My mom was just petrified that the government or whoever these military men were, that they were going to come and just take me. So we got in a car and we drove all the way from Denver back to Elizabethtown, Kentucky. This is where her sister lived, my Aunt Louise. On her property, she had a chicken coop, which was about the size of about 200 square feet. It really wasn't very large. But the men around had transformed this chicken coop into a small little cottage. And this is where I lived with my mom until she remarried. And when she remarried, I had a stepfather. It would be probably one of the darker epochs of my life during that time with him. The problem was he drank a lot and he was very cruel. So it's difficult to be around a person like that after being around such a loving father. So I spent a lot of time away from the house, outdoors. On one particular evening, actually afternoon, I was sitting on this hill right near the house, watching the clouds and just mesmerized by nature. There was a voice that came out of the sky calling my name. And I wasn't sure what that was all about. I never had that happen before, but I was curious about it. The next thing you know, there's this man who walks out from behind all these bushes. This man's very tall. I'd say he's probably as tall as I am now. He had on an adventure hat. At the time, it was just a fedora, but I call it an adventure hat now. He had on baggy pants. See, he could look really kind of like if Indiana Jones had walked out from behind a bush without the whip or the pistol. And he came and sat down and talked to me for a while. told me about my future, what things were going to be like. And then after he finished, he said, well, I've got to go. And he got up. This was after about 20, 30 minutes of talking. I didn't want him to leave, but he said he had to go. And he gave me a ring. He said, hang on to this ring. You'll appreciate what it is someday. Well, I don't have the ring, but I do remember it quite well. It was like a silver ring, far too large for me, but it had the initial J on it. Because I mentioned to him, I exclaimed, this has my initial on it. He says, that's exactly right. That's why you need to remember who you got this ring from, and you keep this ring. It'll fit you one of these days. He got up, he walked away, went behind the bush. I didn't see him. So I got up, ran to where the bush was, and though it would be very clear from where I was standing that no one could be hiding at all, he just wasn't there. From that point forward, this is about 8 years old. From that point forward until about 12, in that central part of Kentucky, there were a number of UFO sightings. People were seeing things just left, right, and center. A lot of folks were afraid what they might be. Russians were a big concern. They thought maybe it was the Russians. They had no idea what was going on, and the military was very tight-lipped about it. So, consequently, I was out frequently at night trying to get away from home until, of course, it got cold, and then I wasn't very happy about being outside. I've never been a fan of the cold. At 12 years old, I just turned 12, so this would be October, November, and I don't remember the year now, but I was outside. I'd been I consider it forced labor. There was a gigantic pile of wood, and it was my task to get all that wood piled up very orderly before I could have supper. Supper had already been served, so I wasn't going to get any supper until I got done, and it was already dusk, and it was cold. So I'm out there trying to stack this wood up, and then I saw something in the distance that caught my eye. It came up over the trees from my right. There was a full moon. And it proceeded to move from the right and really pretty much towards the left. And then it just paused. This was the largest thing that I'd ever seen in the air before. If I had to guess at its size, it would have to have been 500 to 800 feet from one end to the other, and at least 150 feet tall. It was gigantic. Completely silver, no rivet holes, nothing. It was just like polished, yet beautiful. On its side, there were five large circles. And each one of these was a pastel color. And each one of these circles, in order, would, starting from the right, that's when I noticed it, they would just light up and then dim down. And as this one's dimming down, the next one would start glowing brighter. Then it would pause for a second, dim down. The next one would glow brighter and dim down. And they were, like I said, pastel colors. So it was kind of a reddish pink, minty green, soft blue, a yellow, and kind of a reddish color. When it got to the end, it just reversed order, went back the other way. So I'm standing there fascinated by this. I don't know what I'm looking at. Then I felt like maybe I should run over there and see what it was. I was 12 years old. I ran every place I could. I was living on a farm, middle of nowhere. So I decided I was just going to abandon this stupid project with the wood and go running over there. It wasn't all that far, not even a quarter of a mile. And it was just a large field between me and it. So I stood up, went to the fence to jump over it, and there was this voice in my head that said, "Not right now. Wait until we come back." And it knew my name. So I was like, "Oh, okay." I just stood there and watched it for a while, and then it slowly moved off to the left. Now, in the meantime, as it was sitting there, a pretty strong breeze was blowing from my left. Moon was coming up even more, glinting off the side of this. It was beautiful. And this went against the wind, went off to the left. Now, where we lived was on top of a hill in Kentucky. Oh, there are a lot of hills there. And then it just went on, apparently, down and out of sight. I never saw it again. I went ahead and finished with the wood as best I could. I went in the house. That was as good as it gets. Tried to tell everybody about it. They didn't want to hear about it. The next event would take place the following summer. It was in the summer that I would be down in the woods. My friend Randy Adams, went to school with him the whole time, lived really not that far away. He was going to hike from where he lived, and I was going to hike from where I live and go to this place called Spook Hollow. Now, this is where there was apparently an old Civil War graveyard. Never been there before. Randy said he knew where it was. He told me exactly. It's like, wow, I've been there a couple times. I never really noticed anything. And so we had little maps we drew and we confirmed and so on and so forth. And so I was going to go down there to meet Randy. So it was on a Saturday. I took off. It's summer. It's really hot. I've got on my combat boots, which were the only shoes really that I had. And I was only supposed to be wearing those for school most of the time. I was just barefoot. But I was wearing the combat boots, some cutoffs, and a t-shirt with the arms cut out of it. And I took off down into the hollers. After a while, I got to this one particular place we'd agreed to meet. There was a large green patch of moss. It was quite large, maybe 15 feet across, with a tree growing right out of the center of it. And I decided, you know, Randy's not there, I'll just wait. So I sat with my back up against this tree, just waiting, until after a little while, I hear this crunching in the underbrush. I think Randy's coming. Well, instead of it being Randy, it was someone else. It was a fellow who had longish hair, and that was pretty much the style back then. His hair was a little long, and he walked up and told me not to be afraid. And I said, "I'm not afraid. Who are you?" And he said, "My name is Zoe." And he stuck out his hand. We shook hands. Then I noticed what he was wearing. Now, keep in mind, it's really hot and humid. It's summer in Kentucky. It can be pretty brutal. But this fellow has on long pants, boots, a shirt, I guess, like a pullover with, you know, long sleeves and a close neck on his outfit. And I asked him, "Aren't you hot in that?" And he said, "No, this keeps me cool, actually." He says it adapts to the weather. And if I wear it in a place that's really hot, then it keeps me cool. And if I wear it in some place that's really cold, it keeps me warm. I thought, wow, that's interesting. I'd never heard of such a thing, but that's really neat. Because I'm thinking, that'd keep the mosquitoes off of you. So he sat down and we started chatting, but I started getting a bit of an altered feeling. At the time, I didn't have words for it. Now, what I would call it is just an altered feeling. And pretty soon, we weren't talking with words. We were talking in our head. And I remember telling him, "Wow, this is really cool. How do we do this?" He says, "I'm helping you to do it. You've been able to do it, of course, for your entire life, but no one taught you how to do this." He says, "So I'm teaching you how to do this, so you can talk to me this way." And so we had a nice conversation, and it's amazing how much more rapid information can be shared, not just with words, but with pictures, mental images, in other words, and emotions that are associated with those mental images. In other words, you have an absolute understanding of what is trying to be presented or conveyed to you. This went on for a while, and I then started thinking, "Randy's going to be here any time. Would you like to meet him?" And he sort of chuckled, and he said, "Randy won't be coming here today. He's gotten lost." I don't know how he knew that, and I didn't question it. Then he said, "I'm going to have to go." I said, "Where are you going?" He says, "Well, I've got to go back to where I came from. Would it be all right if we met up again and continued our conversation?" And I said, "Sure, that'd be great." I said, "I want to talk about the stars and the planets, and, you know, I had all these things in my mind." What I didn't tell you is from an early age, my father was giving me all these books on geology, astronomy, physics, biology, and I was reading all these things from about the age of 3 years old. Not understanding them until later, but I was absorbing all this information. I was hungry for it. So I had this quest and then this thirst for knowledge. And he said, that'll be fine. We can talk about all of those things and maybe a lot of other things you don't know about yet. I said, "All right, that sounds great." I said, "How did you get here?" He says, "Well, I landed right down over there, and I've got to go back to my ship, and when I do, then I'll be taking off." I said, "Well, can I see it?" And he said, "No, I think what you should do now is just sit here and rest for a while and think about what we've talked about." I really wanted to go, but for some reason, I felt very tired. I really needed to rest, and I agreed with him. "Yep, I guess I should just sit here and just relax for a while and maybe even take a nap." He got up, he walked away. I heard him in the distance crunching through the underbrush. And then I heard like this sound, like a bee in a bottle or a June bug in a bottle, this buzzy sound. And then it flew off, and I thought, "I've never heard a bug like that. That's weird." After a few minutes, I didn't feel tired any longer, so I got up and I went back home. It would be about another month before I would hear from him again. You see, when we were having the conversation, I asked him, "How would I know when you're around so that we can talk?" And so he says, "Do you know Morse code?" And I said, "Well, no, I don't know Morse code, but I know what it is." And so, you know, this is nonverbal communication, so I'm hearing this beeping sound in my mind. I said, "Yeah, that's Morse code." He says, "Well, you can learn Morse code, but when you hear that sound, you'll need to come outside. It'll be during the night. And we're going to be landing." And I could see in his head. It wasn't a question. It wasn't like, go this way, go that way. You see, where I lived, there was a large expanse where gardens and fields were. There was a peninsula of trees where the holler came up. And then on the other side of that peninsula of trees, completely obscuring everything behind it, there was another very large field. And in the back to the right of that field, there was an area where the trees had just been cut out, and they had formed a bit of a cathedral over that. So it was about a 40 or 50 foot clearing, a hollowed out area. He said, that's where we'll be. When you hear that sound, then we'll be there. We'll be waiting for you. We can talk some more. So it's all right. About a month later, in the middle of the night, I heard the beeping sound. I was excited, and it woke me up, actually. And going outside at night when you're living in the country like this is really not that big of an issue. Everybody's pretty much asleep or totally sound asleep. Plus, there was no indoor plumbing. Water was outside, and the outhouse was outside. We had a pump for water. So I got up and took off running and went back there where he was at. And I could see a dim glow back there in that little cathedral-like area. So I went there, and sure enough, there he was. And we continued our conversations. It really didn't last for very long, 15, 20 minutes maybe. And then he said he had to go. Just wanted to find out if everything was all right and if it worked out fine visiting this way. And I was, yeah, of course, everything's great. Towards the end of that summer, probably around October, November-ish, there were some rats or mice. I don't know if they were rats, but they were mice for sure. They had crawled into the well. Now, the well was about 3 feet across, maybe four, and it had stones lining it all the way up to the top. There was a platform, and the pump was on top of this. And this is where we got our drinking water. Unbeknownst to us, these mice had crawled in there, slipped, fell in, drowned, died, and putrefied. And I'd been drinking a lot of this water, because I drank a lot of water back then, and I got terrifically ill. Now, I'd already had several instances where I had had visitations with Zoe, and I'd met a couple of the other people he'd brought along as well. Now, this is going to tie in to the second hour, so that you understand. So we're at, yeah, we're getting close. I got sick from the water, so sick, as a matter of fact, that I thought I was going to die. Doctors couldn't do anything. I was just sent home, given medication, and they hoped that I would get better. I heard the beeping noises, and I didn't show up. I heard them a little louder, and again, I still didn't show up. Finally, I could feel Zoe's presence in my mind, and I just spoke to him like I'm speaking to you, except in my mind. I said, I think I'm dying. I'm very, very sick. Now, this is all in the middle of the night. It's at that point that something remarkable happened. I, of course, was in and out of consciousness, lying there in my underwear in bed. No shirt, just my underpants. There was a cold blast of air, woke me up, and I am on this metal tray of sorts. I can't explain what it was, but it was a very large rectangle, and it was metal for sure. And those little people that had shown up when I was younger, when I had the Cat and the Fiddle experience, they were back. And this thing hovered. They weren't carrying it, they were guiding it. Walked me right out of my room, right across the living room, right out the front door, across the field, and underneath of these power lines, there were three or four saucer-shaped UFOs. One on the ground, one off to the right, just above the ground, maybe 10 feet or so, not near the power lines. Another one off to the right of that and back farther, and probably a couple hundred feet off the ground. And then there was a fourth one that was up and above and to the left of the power lines. And I don't know how far away or how high it was, but it was not crazy high in elevation. I could see all four of them very clearly. And it was cold. I was like freezing. Of course, I had a bad fever. I was blinking long blinks, opening my eyes. I remember going in, and the next thing I know, I'm in this room. And in this room, I'm still on this metal levitating table, whatever it was. These beings are standing around me. They were kind of a bluish white color. And they have these wands in their hands again, like I'd seen all those years before. And they're touching it to me and looking at like something above my head. So I move my head to try and look and see behind me. Now we would call it a flat screen TV. And instead of being side to side, it was long ways. It was, you know, so wide and then quite tall. And they're looking, and I could see part of my image on there, and they're touching and they're touching me, and things are lighting up on the screen, and they're not making much of any sound. They never made a sound before. And they are looking at each other. They're like nodding at each other, and I'm kind of worried at this point. I don't know who these people are. And so they must have picked up on that. And I said, you know, whether out loud or in my mind, is, where is Zoe? Who are you? And they just looked at me unemotionally. They never showed ever any emotion except that one time doing like this. And then there wasn't really any emotion to it. It was just a gesture. A few moments went by and Zoe walks in. He's dressed pretty much the way I always see him. And he walks over and he speaks out loud. He said, "Don't be afraid of them, Jerry. They're our friends. They're very, very smart. You're quite sick, and they know what to do to make you better. So don't be afraid. Just let them do what they need to do, and you're going to be all right. We'll take you back to your bed in just a little while." He says, "Is that all right with you?" And I said, "Sure, that's, you know, what could I say? I'm just really, really sick." And at that point, he just stands, takes a couple steps back, and he's observing while these folks are doing things. And they look at him, and he looks at me, and he says, "They're going to give you a shot in each arm." He said, "Don't be afraid. It won't hurt." He says, "It just feel like someone used a rubber band on you and just snapped you with a rubber band. It's all it is." And he sort of smiled. So I was like, okay. I wasn't cold any longer. So they took this device that was kind of like, I don't know, it was some sort of a tube thing. They didn't have hands like us. They had only three, four fingers, but they were quite dexterous with that. And they took this thing, they looked at each other, and they put it to my arms, and it went like a hiss, like, into my arm, and it did feel like someone used a rubber band on me. And within a few moments, I just fell asleep. When I woke up the next morning, in my bed, under my covers, I felt pretty good. I got up. Now, this has been going on for at least a week. So I got up, I went to the kitchen after I got dressed, and my mom is like, "Well, aren't you sick?" And I said, "No, I feel great." "Well, how is that possible?" I said, "Well, the people came last night and gave me a shot in both arms, and they said I was going to be fine, and so I feel great." She says, "You're just having dreams." I said, "No, I'm not. Look at my arm." I pulled up my shirt. There were two circles, one on each arm. She went white. She didn't want to talk about it. She told me to go brush my teeth, get ready for breakfast. I had work I had to do that day if I was feeling better. And my stepdad came in and he's all like, you know, "Get your boots on. We're going to go chop wood," or something. It was like, who cares if you were sick? So the people that I met, Zoe and the others like him, they spent a lot of years, 5 years really, intently being a friend, teaching me things, giving me insight into so many different levels of science, the universe, history of this world, history out there. And they were working in a cooperative companionship, I would say, with another race of beings. Not the short, dark grays. I've encountered them too, and it's not the same people. Instead, these are taller. They're 4 to 5 feet tall. They, instead of being gray color, they have a bluish, whitish cast to them, although they look very much like the short, gray aliens that you're probably so familiar with. It's a different group of people. And of course, I call them people because I got to know them as people. And with that in mind, during the next hour, I'm going to go into a little bit more. And we're going to talk about the Travis Walton incident, my experience with Zoe and the others, where that's concerned. And I'll complete the entire gamut of all of this, and I'll be taking your calls. I am looking at the comments over here on Discus, so thank you very much for those. A lot of effort went into making that happen. So we're going to take a break. We're at the hour point, and we'll see how it goes from there. Let me think about this for a second. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Hour 2. For those of you who are listening on the radio server, this concludes the free portion of our show. I'd like to invite you to become a supporter at patreon.com/expeditions, Expeditions. And in doing that, you'll be supporting this show, and you'll also have access to the full show. Plus, if you wanted to watch, you certainly could be watching right now. There's not a lot to see except me sitting here. But at other times, there are things. And of course, I do have a graphic I'm going to put up here in just a little bit anyway. But you're missing out on a lot more than just watching the show, folks. There's a lot of material at jerrywillsshow.com. Our members have access to the Discus, sometimes called Discus, which is a live feed so that we can communicate with each other during the show. And you also would have access to the call-in lines, and you can call from anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter where you are. You'll have a way that you can reach out, make a phone call, and call me here at the cafe at the universe where I'm sitting right now. Enjoy a nice juice drink. Yes, it's just delicious, and you're missing out because you're not a member. So I invite you to think about it. You can join for as little as $2. We encourage you to join for more, of course, because the more you support the show, the more we can do with it. And as you can tell, if you're already a member, you can see It's made quite a few leaps and bounds in the past few weeks, and we have more in mind beyond this. So I'll be keeping you in the members area fully apprised of what's going on there. But for you who are listening, this concludes the free portion of the Jerry Will Show. And like I said, I encourage you to become a member. Catch the rest of it. You'll have access to all the archives, audio as well as video, and everything else that's in there. There's a lot of stuff. So go check it out. Think about it. We'd love to have you as a part of our community. And with that, I'm going to kill this audio portion of the broadcast. Thank you so much for listening.